The gospel is from Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "Those last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. The word of the Lord.
If you have been around kids, whether you have your own or just have been around them or even remember being one, you notice this truth. And the truth is that one does not have to teach children selfishness, but one does have to teach children to be generous, right? The phrase, "No, mine," comes naturally. You don't have to teach that. The phrase, "Would you like to play with my toy?" on the other hand, is definitely a learned behavior. And so to put it another way, selfishness is the default setting in humans, and selflessness is something that we have to learn to do and to value. In fact, I would say the act of selflessness and generosity isn't just a lesson that we try to master as toddlers, right? When we're kids, hopefully our parents teach us to share, and so we start, you know, mastering generosity. But really, I think these are values that we spend our whole life struggling with in order to truly make progress, because there's always that temptation. There's always that little thing on our shoulder saying, you know, just do things for yourself, just be selfish. So that temptation is a never-ending one. Well, I'd like to illustrate this tendency towards self-centeredness by sharing a story of one of my moral failures in life when I was in college. Please don't judge me too harshly. I was young, and I'd like to think I made a little progress since then, but who knows? But when I was in college, I began to ponder going to seminary. At first, I was more thinking of just youth directing, but some sort of ministry, maybe be a pastor someday. And I attended a campus ministry, so one day I was visiting with my campus pastor and telling him about this idea I had, this aspiration, and I was starting to tell him about, you know, the many things I'd done in the church up to that point. I thought it was pretty good. I had attended youth group in high school. During college years, I had done, in between the college and the summers, Bible camp counseling. I had done some youth directing over those last few years, and my wife and I were preparing to do a year of service in Kenya, in Africa. And so I was telling about all this stuff and how I wanted to go to seminary, but that I really didn't have that much money. And then I said, "You know, there are some pretty good scholarships for seminary, and I've done a lot for the church. So, you know, I better get one of them." And without missing a beat, my campus pastor said, "Oh, so it's all about you, Paul." And it was one of those moments where, you know, someone you know well says something honest that immediately puts you in your place. And I spent the next few moments kind of, you know, stuttering a little bit, trying to rationalize, trying to justify what I had said. But the truth was, as soon as he said, "Oh, it's all about you, Paul," I knew immediately he was right, that my comment had been incredibly entitled, incredibly arrogant, and incredibly self-centered. And when I ended up going to seminary years later, I further learned how wrong I had been to think that I was the most qualified person to go to seminary and certainly to get a scholarship for seminary. For instance, one of my classmates was a second career guy, and previous to going to seminary, he had been a medical doctor, and not just any kind of doctor. He had actually gone out to Papua New Guinea in the jungle, deep in the remote areas, and he had been one of these jungle doctors, right, just kind of keeping people alive, bringing medical supplies to people who had barely ever had it, and incredible stories he could share. And later after that, he had worked with the ELCA to be the head doctor in Africa in charge of anti-HIV AIDS work. So he was this incredibly impressive guy. And the more I learned about it, the more I thought, you know, I shouldn't be sitting next to him in a desk. I should be learning from him in a desk in seminary. Another person who amazed me in seminary was a lady who had come to seminary, again, a second career person, but she had felt the call to ministry. And this was despite the fact that her husband had committed suicide a few years before. And personally, this is one of the hardest things, one of the most challenging scenarios of faith, of life, that I can imagine. And yet, somehow, she still believed in a loving God who she believed still loved her and was bringing her to healing, and she wanted to share this loving God with other people. And I was always just amazed, enamored by her sense of faith, the strength of her faith to push through that and then want to do ministry for others. So that's all to say that I had to learn that lesson of selflessness, of non-arrogance, of generosity of spirit. It's a lesson that I learned then. It's a lesson that I still continue to learn in life. And I think it is a lesson that continues to unfold in our lives if we're willing to let it. I think maybe another word for generosity and selflessness is radical love. Radical love is the kind of love that generously includes everyone. Radical love forgives people, even if it's hard to do. Radical love finds people who are left out and welcomes them in. Radical love looks for hurting people and heals them. That's radical love. And I think it's important to know about radical love because if we look into the Bible, this is exactly the kind of love we find that defines God. And this is certainly the kind of love we encounter in today's story. When Jesus is doing something he often did, he was teaching, and he was teaching, as he often did, through a parable. Sometimes it's called the parable of the laborers or the parable of the generous landowner. But the story goes, as you heard, that the landowner is looking for laborers to work in his vineyard, and he finds some people at the beginning of the day. He comes to an agreement about a fair wage that'll be good. And they show up early, they start doing the work, and they work the whole day faithfully. So these laborers are putting in a good hard day's work, but as the day continues, the landowner continues to meet people who have nothing to do, and he welcomes them in as laborers. You know, he hires some more later in the morning, and some in noon, and some in the afternoon, and all the way to the last hour, he hires more workers, which is fine. But what's not fine with the original laborers is that he continues to offer them a full day's wage despite that they only worked part of days or even like 1 hour's work. So, of course, this angers the laborers who showed up at the beginning of the day, and they complain to the landowner. So the landowner, who, by the way, I think the giveaway is the landowner clearly represents God. God, the landowner, replies, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I gave to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first and the first will be last." Now, I'm sure you all have realized by now that this story isn't really about God generously offering literal wages. It's really a story about God generously offering love. It's about God's radical love. And just like the parable suggests, radical love is very easy for God to give out, but very hard for humans to comprehend and to accept. Because like we observed earlier, we humans are basically self-centered creatures, or at least we have that tendency. We have that temptation. We prefer a world where there are haves and have-nots, especially if we're on the have side, because then we feel kind of special. And if the have-nots are people we feel like don't deserve to have, we're pretty happy with people being left out. So this is why when we encounter radical love, not just in God, but within in other people, you know, we're just as likely to dismiss it as we are to embrace it. We're just as likely to call someone who's practicing radical love a fool, a crazy person, as we are to call them a saint. You know, an example of this trend, there was a guy named St. Francis of Assisi, very famous Christian who lived in the medieval ages, a little bit before Martin Luther. And he had this famous ministry to the sick and the poor and the outcasts of society. And when he went on this mission, he had a shift in his young adult life. Many people thought he had gone insane, right? That's what they thought of his kind of conversion experience. You see, St. Francis had been a wealthy person. He was the son of a powerful merchant. And, you know, it wasn't normal for a wealthy young man to choose a life of poverty and service and simplicity. That wasn't normal. That didn't suit society well. It wasn't normal for a rich man, an important person with influence, to embrace beggars and to literally embrace lepers. It wasn't normal that he saw God's love so present in the world that he would even talk about, you know, brother, sun, and sister, moon, and he would pray for the animals and talk to them. I mean, he was kind of a weird guy by society's standards. But he inspired millions, right? And even though initially he seemed crazy, today, how many people have a St. Francis in their garden? I mean, and not just that, but I mean, looking at the life, he's inspired millions of the people because of his weirdness and radical love. Likewise, when Jesus, right, the ultimate example of radical love, lived in this world, everyone liked that a man of God would come and teach the gospel. That was a good thing. But when he started showing up in the houses of people of bad reputation, the tax collectors, the prostitutes, the sinners, the people everyone knew were bad and weren't worth God's love, then people started questioning whether Jesus had lost his way. After all, these were the people who society said were undeserving of love and attention, especially from a man of God. And this is often how it is, right? When we see radical love, it's a little hard for us to accept because we so much think in terms of whether someone deserves something or not. And this can be the way it's hard for us to accept. And yet once in a while when we see radical love and when we see it in Jesus, our hearts tell us that this is actually exactly what the world needs more of. It may be strange, it may be unusual, but this is the thing that can bring healing. You know, in our world and in our lives, how many times do we have to try failed strategies of living? How many times do we have to try holding grudges and hatred and racism and exclusion and revenge and violence until we realize that these things fix nothing? They fix nothing in our personal lives. They fix nothing in the world. The only thing that really brings healing is when radical love, generous love, even foolish love that God gives us enters into the equation. So today Jesus asks us, can we handle God's generosity? Often we can handle it for ourselves, but can we handle that God gives it to others? Can we realize that God is more interested in us loving and including people than he is in us judging and excluding people? Can we realize that what the world calls foolish love is actually the only thing that can save the world and save ourselves? You know, by the standards of his day, Jesus's radical love was foolish. And really, it still is foolish by the standards of our day. But so be it. This is the life Jesus calls us into and welcomes us with. So let's be fools for God, and let's be fools for generous love. Amen.